Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Perceptious Anonymous. My name is Christy Ann. You guys, I've done so much preparation trying to get this episode done. I apologize for it coming out a little bit late. I am still in the process of moving and just kind of the general, I don't know, general change of the season stuff that I'm working through personally, as well as I know we're all working through as a whole. In addition to trying to set up some really nice speakers and a really nice microphone, and I can't get it to work. I don't know. It's been a whole process of something that I've been trying to do this morning, so I've been messing around with it for about an hour. Either way, I'm really happy to be here with you guys today. What I want to talk about is my initial idea for this episode was to base it off of a continuation of the conversation we were having last week, which is the transpersonal ecology, which is a theory from Warwick Fox, and that in turn was based off the idea of deep ecology. So in a way, this is kind of like the third episode building off of what Emily and I had begun talking about a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to go back over the ideas of deep ecology because I did that in the transpersonal ecology episode. However, I would like to retouch base on what transpersonal ecology is. To me, like I said, when I originally had intended to do this episode, what I wanted to do was elaborate on the three layers of identity associated with this personal, not with this personal, but identity related to this particular philosophy. So via Warwick Fox's ideas, transpersonal ecology breaks it down into three different areas. We have our personal identity, we have our ontological identity, and then we have our cosmological identity. And at first, what I had to do is I wanted to get really specific on what exactly we were talking about. And I went down to literally Googling the ideas of what does personal mean? Okay. And then what does ontological mean? And what does cosmological mean? And so I found that I went really far down a lot of different holes. And on a personal level, what I'm trying to do to progress in this podcast and progress in my journalism skills as a whole is I really want to make sure that I develop a cohesive picture of what I want to convey to you guys. I keep asking myself, what's the most interesting questions that I can ask? What can make this the most interesting? What can make this the most unique? And what is it that's really gonna help us? Like, what is something that I can bring to the table that is interesting and forthright and something that'll really just initiate conversation and initiate progressive thought. And I keep, you know what, and as the days go on, I'm going to continue to ask myself that, and I'm going to continue to be the best version of myself that I can for you guys. What I've done today is I have put together a couple of lists. Like I said, I went so far down this rabbit hole of trying to figure out what exactly I want to say. What is identity as a whole? What is the self? What's cosmologically? How is that different than ontologically? What the hell does ontological mean? How is that different than who we are as people? And so I came across so many. What I ended up doing was going back into researching all these different ideas of these theories of personal development, theories of self-actualization, theories of what the self is, theories of what identity is. And I've decided to come down to a couple different areas, some specific theories that I want to talk about, some theoreticists, theorists that I want to talk about. And then I really want to touch base on these different ideas of what's called the landscape of the self and then the 12 archetypes of identity. So let's go ahead and start there. So let's start with Warwick Fox's ideas of what personal identity is, ontological identity, and cosmological identity. So personal identity, when looking at how he sort of is branching out and starting at the smallest version of who we can recognize as ourselves as a whole. Like, if we are anything of anything, what is the smallest part of that? And the smallest part of that is going to be just who we are as individuals, and then who we are in a social construct, and then who we are as a species, and then who we are as a planet, and how we can sort of shift our perspective and shift our actions and shift our priorities and our behaviors based on the ideas of where we are sitting and what our priorities are. So in terms of the personal identity, how I interpret this is We have the ego, the personality, our beliefs, our actions, our layers of self-actualization that just make up like who we are. And we have all these theories like Eric Erikson and Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung and all these theorists that have tried to really pinpoint the proper questions to elaborate on who are we, what are we doing, and all these sort of like they can go from really scientific questions and scientific answers and scientific sort of searches onto like these massive existential theoretical fucking who knows what. Like it can be so specific or it can be so broad. And so basically what I just narrowed it down to, what is the self? And the self is an individual person as the object of its own reflective consciousness. And I find that extremely interesting. It doesn't necessarily have to be a person. However, I do really appreciate the new term, non-human persons. And I guess I think about that a lot when I think about my cats, or if anyone has animals, or if anyone has really strongly interacted with animals, we know that they have their own personalities and we know that they have their own, they're their own people, whether or not they are a human or not. So just for the sake of argument, we are just going to continue to talk about, you know, the self from a human perspective, human-centered perspective. Surprise, surprise. I'm sure this is that's what we do, right? I mean, as being humans, I believe that we are a little confused. And I think that's something that I've always said is that we are sort of crawling out of our skin a little bit. We're the only animals of which we can interact with on the same level as one another. Like, we can interact with animals, dolphins and penguins and our cats and birds and all these things, and they have their own, like, they are definitely something that is outside of us, but it's only really other humans that we can interact with, this that use language in the way that we do and that can challenge us in the way that we do, or that we can fall in love with the way that we do. So, whatever. Either way. So, we are the object of our own reflective consciousness. And so I came across a really interesting article at livescience.com, and it's called The Landscapes of the Self. And I'll go ahead and post this in the show notes. It said that there is a direct relation to the nature and the causation of consciousness, because of the self is just a higher order of consciousness. So as I was preparing for this show, we have the ideas of, you know, it's saying personal identity. And then you have to ask yourself, who am I, and what does being I mean? Who is this I? Who is this person that is taking control of and making decisions, and that is the ultimate defining factor for what happens in our lives? Who are we? And so we have this idea of ego, and Sigmund Freud, I found it so interesting. I haven't studied Sigmund Freud for quite a few years, but I really appreciate his ideas of the id, the ego, and the superego. And so, I don't know, there's just so many layers of how we can break this down. It can get so ultra complicated on just defining who are we, blah, 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 versus who we are socially. And I guess socially is what is the most interesting thing to me. I find that if I get too far into me trying to figure out why I am a person as a whole, can get really hard for me. And I tend to get really existential, and it tends to freak me out. And then I can kind of, I guess I tend toward nihilism, or tend towards, you know, like, what's the point? Why am I here? Blah, blah, blah. What role do we have? Everything's just here for no reason at all. We're just an accident. And, you know, I don't know. It can get really far down the hole. However, so I want to follow up the idea with, what is the self? With the question is, what is identity? So if we do, in fact, have this core component that is the self, this core component that may or may not be a soul or a spirit or a personality, like any of these things we want to call it, it is the most basic component of what we can define as who we are. Followed by that is our identity. And the identity are these sort of layers of which we relate to, and these different spheres of things that we can say that we believe in, or different spheres of things that we can say that we can relate to. So these will be the qualities that we believe that we have, our beliefs as a whole, our personality traits. So these different, we can break that down even further towards our predispositions and our desires and all of these things. What our looks as a whole, and just these different levels of things that we feel that we resonate with and we feel that we could point at and say, yes, these represent me. And whether they represent us on an internal factor, like what our beliefs are, for us to have this sort of external representation that we see in others that we're able to point to as well and say, yes, I resonate with that, or no, I don't resonate with that. And so there are so many different theories on the idea of identity, and I'm really excited to go on and continue to talk about Carl Jung's archetypes of identity. But first, I want to go through and just discuss a little bit of the theories around what the self is. So I feel like, I don't know about you, but I know that obviously as I'm looking at my notes, you guys should just see all this stuff that I've written and see how I've written it. And I tend to be so, in some ways, I can tend to be so detail oriented, and I can be so focused on making sure that things are really quite pinpointed and understand and sort of collapsed into healthy, understandable bite-sized pieces that, you know, I guess it's maybe my necessary desire for control in some ways, or my desire to really feel like I can understand a topic and to not mistake it for something else. I think that personally, that is a strong, an issue that I work on. I think that being mistaken or being afraid of being mistaken for something, like saying one thing, meaning one thing, and then that being taken by another person in a different manner, I think that in some ways I can tend to lean a little bit more neurotically on really making sure that I understand another person or understand, you know, myself. I don't know. I'm just a little bit, as I get older, I realize sort of how far I can take it, and that there is this sort of differential line between when can you just be okay with allowing something to be a little bit vague? Not everything has to be so pinpointed and so specific, and then some things can just be what they are, which is human, and that we are human, and that we are complex, and we're often inconsistent, and to be okay with those inconsistencies. I don't know. Either way, so breaking us down, we have the idea of the self, and then we have the idea of the identity. And then this identity, what I didn't think about this at first, however, I thought it was sort of a given, but as I was doing more research and I came across the differentiation between who we are, which is our memories, our experiences, our beliefs, and then who we are in terms of who we are to other people. What role do we play in other people's lives, and how does that define us? So for myself, I, at the very least, I am a woman. I am from Nevada. You know, and then everything else from there kind of gets a little bit murky. Like, I am a podcast host. I guess at this point in my life, I'm at this really strong inference of flux. And so these different areas and these different terms and these different words that I've labeled myself and I found really proud to label myself as, I am sort of growing out of. And maybe that's because I am about to be 30 years old. And a lot of people, people disregard this shift really often. If they're over the age of 30, they're like, oh yeah, you're just a baby. But then again, other people my age are like, nah, dude, I get it. Like, we are changing, and we have a lot of choices that we're being asked to make, and whether we're asking ourselves to make on what parts of our teens and our 20s do we want to maintain and we want to continue on with us, and what things are we ready to be done with? Like, be ready to be done with the drugs and alcohol, to be ready to be done with allowing ourselves to change how we act based on whether or not it's going to offend other people. To what extent are we willing to do that? To what extent are we willing to stay in a job that we don't like? What is it that we do want to do? What is it that we do like? I don't know. So I guess for myself, I'm going through this really strong kind of, I don't know, constant existential identity crisis that is a part of who I am. And maybe that's a part of the role that I'm here to play, and that I'm here to play on radio with you guys. I'm sure that a lot of you resonate with that. Maybe some of you guys have just a stronger sense of self, and you have a much easier path that's been laid out and that you've been able to find. But for me, you know what, dude? I don't know. I'm just a journalist. just a journalist. Anyway, so who are you in relation to what you define as yourself? And then who are you in relation to what role you play in other people's lives? For my best friend, who was actually, she was supposed to be on the show with me, and that she just had her first child. And so I'm watching her identity shift as we speak. And I'm watching her move from, you know, being this individual person and then being a wife and then now being a wife and a mother. And though I am not going through that, I guess I'm going through it in a sort of vicarious manner where I'm watching her do this and I'm watching what sort of changes it takes to your priorities and what sort of changes it takes to what you're willing to deal with and what you are focused on maintaining and building in your life. And so you have the role of just being a single person, and then you have the role of being a girlfriend or a wife or a boyfriend or a husband. And then you have the role of being a mother or a father, and then you could be a grandmother and grandfather. And so or you can be a teacher, or you can just be, you know, this particular person's best friend, if that's really how you want to identify yourself. When I was doing research into these theories of identity, you guys should see this. I just have so many things pulled up right now trying to pinpoint what exactly is identity, and what is it, how is that important to us, and what sort of constructs are based around that people have already come up with. So identity can also be importantly diagnosed as what you determine to be your race and ethnicity, your gender, your socioeconomic status and social class, your sexual orientation, your abilities or disabilities, your religion, your intersectionality. I don't think I know what that means. How interesting. I guess I'll have to look into that. Or in what ways these things cross-reference one another, and how is that important to you? So these are, according to like Northwestern Education, talking about what an identity breakdown is, that is one of the primary things that are imposed on us based on how we are represented by physical things. So like the fact that I am a white woman, middle class, you know, I don't know, like where I'm from, my sexual orientation, all of these things. And so those are things that can be easily referenced to, because everyone shares something amongst that. Like it can be broken down really just scientifically and straight to the fact of the matter, or it can be built out so metaphysically and so theoretically to say that, you know, where we're actually progressing in terms of our ideas on gender. Like, how is someone going to tell me that I'm a woman it can be based on our genetics, or it can be based on the sex and gender being different than, I don't know. I'm not positive all of the theories around gender and the ideas around identity in that sort of matter. What I'm here to talk about is just, you know, who, in theory, who are we? Why are we the way that we are? And I wanted to read through this article, which I found extremely interesting. So this article is on Live Science, and so it's called What is a Self and Here Are All the Possibilities, and it's written by Robert Lawrence Kuhn, and I find that extremely, extremely interesting. It's getting straight to the point of, all right, so what is the self? And it says, at one extreme, the self is just a made-up construct that arises from our complex brains interacting with its environment. And then at the other extreme, you have or are a self, quotations. And though science may not be able to prove it, something strange, perhaps something non-physical or supernatural is going on that points out to the existence of a thing, what's called a spirit or soul, that goes beyond the physical realm and could even survive the death of your fleshy body. And so, in fact, these are the sort of mainstream competing ideas of what differentiates and what means to be who we are. Are we just this fleshy bag of neurons and hormones and memories and experiences and genetics and whatever is all being passed down through that? We're talking about genetic memory and genetic trauma and, you know, genetic predispositions, versus us being a soul that chooses to be born inside of a body and chooses to be born inside of a particular period of time. And even to some theories, they say that we choose our parents. We choose some of the bigger issues that we go through in life, or the bigger lessons that we go through. And I guess in some ways I am prone to believing that. I do believe that, I've strongly have believed this for a very long time, that those of us born at this period in time are here for a reason. I mean, and not just a reason that's like super, super vague, but I think that we are seeing a very large breakdown of all the systems that had once carried us forward, and then a breakdown of traditions that, for better or for worse, were things that maintained society or were things that maintained like these family sectors and our society and our cultures. And so we are seeing this because of the internet, because of technology, because of the impending doom of our planet. Like, there's just all of these things that are coming to a high point of resolution and a high point of intersectionality that gives us the choice to continue on about our lives the way that we have, in a way that is often really disrespectful and really an issue to the planet and to women and to minorities and to each other and whatever. And then also just things that happen to be the culmination of really bad decisions over the years and really good decisions. I believe that we are at a very prominent point in our spiritual awakening, and that the paradigm is sort of shifting from us having been asleep and us having been really focused on our masculine side and really focused on the idea of everything outside of us. And what is outside of us? What defines us? How can we create these structures that are really non-spiritual and non-metaphysical or even metaphorical? Like, we've really wanted to build these structures for ourselves that we think that we can rely on. And now I believe that we've become too structured, and we are sort of retreating inward now. And I think that we're really seeing that. We're really going to continue to see that with this renaissance of psychedelics, at least here in the West. A lot of people are going to have access to the ability to expand inward and to see ourselves from a different, more a softer perspective, or a harder perspective in some ways, that we're actually forcing ourselves to see the shit that we've been doing. And I believe that like cannabis and psychedelics can be really good for that. While, you know, there's been multiple times where I've been afraid and I've been really nervous to be forced to look at the things about myself or about my life that are bothering me, or forced to, like, I'm like afraid to sit down and think about the death of my mother, or think about, you know, the trouble that I've been in, or am I good enough, or like any of these things that are uncomfortable to think about or uncomfortable to interact with and to sort of genuinely hold within ourselves so that they can come to the complete surface. I think that that's what psychedelics and cannabis are able to do for us, and it's good for us to be careful nonetheless, to be definitely aware of how comfortable you need to be, you know, and to not push yourself so far into an area that you're not ready to be. But, you know, shadow work can be done in a series of ways. It doesn't necessarily need to be done through the plant allyship. And I think that we all know that. Either way, what am I talking about? I'm just kind of rambling. I'm sorry, guys. Oh, yeah. So I wanted to continue to talk about this Life Science article, What is the Self? And so we have these competing ideas of whether the self is the spirit, and that we are born into these bodies, and that we develop our souls and we develop our life's purpose, or the fact that we even have a life's purpose, or are we just me in some ways? And so I guess in some ways we'll never know. Some ways we'll never know the interaction between the spirit and, you know, either, whatever. So the self landscape, this person, Mr. Kuhn, came up with these 10 categories or explanations of the landscape that are the self. And I found these extremely interesting. And it says, so the first one, the illusion. The self is not real. It is an artificial construct of competing neural systems seeking to make sense of a myriad of streams of inner information, a sort of trick of the brain. And I think that's really interesting. I mean, in a way, I tend to lean that way. Like, that I wouldn't say that it's necessarily an illusion, but I would say that maybe our self or our consciousness or our metaconsciousness is a byproduct of our really complex and really beautifully built brains just trying to understand itself. And I mean, isn't that kind of incredible if you think about the expansion of existence and the expansion of life on Earth anyway? You have these single-celled organisms that have then grown into a stomach sac, And then the stomach sac transforms into all these different animals. And then the animals eventually transform into what we are. And I mean, I'm just talking about the theory of evolution and how they like, how something can start out in one way and they can eventually progress into what we are. So why would it not be able to create this sort of like third person reflective idea, this reflective component of our brains, so that we're able to analyze all this sort of information and make conscious decisions based on the information that we're taking in? Like, we don't understand the brain. We don't understand a lot of how our bodies work and how consciousness works at all. I don't know. It's, to me, that's just really fucking interesting, is that we, just by the fact of us having been created, and by created, I mean evolving from whatever, like continuing to evolve, the fact that we now have this like just metacognitive ability to react to what's going on inside of our brains and to not just be based on instinct. Freud, what I found, I really appreciated this breakdown that I found of the id. So once again, with Sigmund Freud, he says there's the id, the ego, and the superego. And the id is the natural drive or the instinct, or in some ways just the reptilian animalistic brain. What things are innate to us? What things are the very, very basis for our development, very basis for survival, things that we don't necessarily have control over, like our sex drive, our need to eat, just any of these like purely animalistic, you know, parts of ourselves. And then we have the superego, which is the morality or the higher purpose or this like overarching idea of what the best action is, or what we know to be right, what we know to be wrong, all these things that are just the complete opposite of just our need for survival. Like, they are the ultimate idealization of what we could become as people. And then you have the ego. And the ego is the interdimensionality of it. It is the intermediary of it. And it's the thing that decides whether or not we recognize that we decide it, and whether or not we're able to, some things are easier to train ourselves into being more aware of than other things are. You know, I believe that neuroplasticity plays a big role, and that things like cognitive behavioral therapy or dialectical behavioral therapy, they're able to help us become aware of our mental processes, and they help us to be able to find a way to slow our brain down and slow our actions down and slow our reactions down, so that we have the ability to make a choice and not just to be, you know, a victim of our own selves and a victim of our own actions, regardless of we want them to, like addiction. Like, I really don't want to drink today. I don't want to drink today. I don't want to drink today. And then we end up drinking today or whatever it is. Or like, I really don't want to eat meat anymore. And then you're like, damn, that bacon looks really good. Like, you know, I think it's all just a matter of a muscle. Everything's just a muscle. So either way, so the id, the ego, the superego, these different layers, these different theories of ourselves. And, you know, and then you have Erik Erikson's theory of identity, which is the eight developmental stages of our identity and the eight crises that we go through. And I think that we've all heard the term identity crisis. And I hadn't heard that for so long. And I was just rethinking about it once again while doing research onto this. And I found that there, some of us go through more than others, man. And I know that, you know, I do have a predisposition towards instability in some ways, and towards like just really high levels of variability, and that I oftentimes can have a hard time managing these competing sides inside of myself. So I tend to move from one to another, and so it's kind of always this level of internal crisis. And I'm sure that we all have this, or these levels of internal friction, rather, not necessarily crisis all the time. Like, I'm having a great day today. I spent so long trying to get this microphone to work today, you guys. It didn't work. So I have this beautiful setup I'm around. I have this beautiful microphone, this beautiful setup, headphones and all this stuff. And like, I'm still just using my laptop. You know, keep an eye out, guys. Next time, I really look forward to making sure that this works so I can have even higher quality audio for you guys. Anyway, so moving on to the second theory or the second landscape of the self, we have the phenomenal subjectivity, The self is real in that the subject has authentic, felt experiences that compose a coherent whole. But the self remains the product of brain neurophysiology and neurochemistry functioning, which as we know it, with nothing else needed and certainly nothing exotic. Maybe because of the Joe Exotic thing, you know, he came into our lives like a tornado, and then now he's just a part of our memory during the crisis of 2020. I don't know, the identity crisis of 2020. Maybe he was the face of it. That's pretty fantastic. Bless his heart. Pray for them. So anyway, yeah, the phenomenal subjectivity. The self is real in that the subject has authentic self-experience and is composed of a coherent whole, but it just remains the product of neurophysiology and neurochemistry functioning. And that's a really strong, easily composed breakdown of what we could be and just what a determination of why we even have this, why we have personalities as a whole in general. So number three, patterns of information. The self is a highly complex, highly particular array of properties and relationships that can be expressed in some kind of formalized manner, perhaps featuring causal connections and perhaps reproducible beyond biological brains in artificial brains, meaning that the self could be uploaded to a non-biological substrate. I don't even want to talk about that right now. By the way, I haven't read through all of these. I really would just kind of wanted to work on the fly on all of this. I'm really enjoying doing these particular episodes on, since our podcast has sort of taken a little bit of a different turn. I'm really excited for the topics that I'm trying to build off of. I know that for the last 2 years, we've been really focused on sort of the spiritual aspects and these determinations of ancient spiritualities and current spiritualities and all that. And I do still want to build on that, but this is a little bit more of my style. I'm really looking forward to these different topics of identifying what we are, who we are, who we are socially, and then all of these social topics that are becoming really prominent and really important. And I look forward to taking you guys along the ride with that and us getting to know each other a little bit more. Anyway, so yeah, they're saying that biology can be uploaded to non-biological substrate, and that's crazy. I don't want to talk about it. So that's some AI shit that I don't quite understand, and I don't know how I feel about. So number four, the weak emergence. The self is the product of interacting brain mechanisms, both at the microscopic neuronal level and at the macroscopic brain systems level. Given future neuroscience, eventually the self will be predictable from the brain alone. In other words, brain activity alone could still explain the self entirely. And I think that that is true, but that's like a really watered down version of what the self would be. Like, I think that if you have an emotion and they're able to read on EEG or EKG or whatever, where in the part of the brain that emotion is coming from or is being triggered from your emotion. It doesn't necessarily say that the emotion came before the neuronal activity or whether the neuronal activity is what's stimulating the emotion. There is still quite a bit of controversy around that, or around like how in some research they have determined that we react, what, like 3 milliseconds before something actually happens to us. Sort of like there's this outside level of precognitive expectation that occurs that we're not aware that we are in fact aware of. And so we're reacting to something before it happens. And so we don't know. I mean, so there is, I think that as we get closer to understanding at least how the brain works, I think that it would be very ill at ease of us to be able to just choose to just water it down to the idea that a brain is just a brain and all we are is a brain. Because in fact, think about the fact that our heart has a stronger electromagnetic field than our brain does in general. And that our heart and our stomach both have neuronal accessibility, neuronal networks rather. So, you know, we're not just what our brain says we are, and we're not just what they can see on our brain, but I think that we know that. And any one of us with some spiritual inclination or even a existential inclination realize that we're not just these meat sacks, I would hope. Number five, Strong emergence. The self is a profoundly new thing that comes into existence as a product of underlying brain activities alone. But no matter how advanced neuroscience becomes, the self can never be predicted from these underlying brain activities, not even in principle. Okay, so that in fact is the counter argument from weak emergence. So at the very least, we are strictly what our brain says, and we're going to be able to determine who we are as people just based on what they see is going on in our brains, versus the strong emergence. Of the fact that we'll never know. All we can see is what we have the technology to see, and I think that that's probably far more accurate, is that we can develop technology sort of based on identifying and measuring these ideas that we already preconceivedly have. So it's sort of like, I have a theory that, you know, that these certain types of birds are only come in this color, and this color, and then we seek out to define whether or not that's correct or incorrect. So we already have this like preconceived idea of what we're looking for. And I think oftentimes, because we're so focused on a conclusion that we're trying to define or disprove, to prove or disprove, that we can tend to miss a lot of information that gives us a whole other emergence of ideas that has to do with this topic, just because we can be so closed-minded, if that makes sense. So, all right, number 6, existential unity. The self is an existentially unified whole, and that its parts are incapable of separate existence, and that successive mental states of the same self are inextricably bound through some kind of deep coherence, perhaps through quantum-based, perhaps something else, but it's still some kind of, but still of a kind that could count as physical. Some coherent, some incoherent, some quantum, some not necessarily. Let me reread that again. The self is an existentially unified whole in that its parts are incapable of separate existence, and that successive mental states of the same self are inextricably bound through some kind of deep coherence. Okay, yeah, I understand that. So all these different ideas that we determine as different levels of ourselves. So to me, this might be the idea of like multiple dimensions, or multiple brain waves. They are, in fact, we're all the same thing. I mean, they all come from us, and we're all aware, we're all interacting with it. But that we're not exactly sure how it is in fact kept together, like, and that would be the self, the one defining factor that keeps all of these non-physical characteristics together. That's fucking interesting. That could be something we have a whole episode on, actually. Number 7, special assembly of a new force or structure. The self is a particular organization of a new force or structure in nature that generates or enables consciousness in an enhanced physical world. For example, panpsychism, where consciousness is a non-reducible feature of every particle, each having inherent proto-consciousness, or integrated information theory, where consciousness is an independent, non-reducible organization of reality, perhaps a different dimension of reality. I absolutely love that. The idea that every atom has at least a level of proto-consciousness, which is actually what I believe, is that, I mean, I feel like that resonates so strongly, is that it reminds me of the idea that we have a human, and a human makes up, multiple humans make up humanity. We have a cell, and multiple cells make up a human. So in what ways, how would we not be able to say that one atom or one of the smallest breakdowns of physical existence doesn't already have its own level of consciousness? And then I guess we would have to ask, what is consciousness? Perhaps it's a self-awareness. But then what determines the self? Is the self this thing that is self-aware? I guess perhaps that's as far as I would really want to take it, is I would really want to define like that. I mean, that would make sense, is that different, that's how different things have a different level of consciousness. And that would really relate to the idea of animism, is that we have a rock, we have a tree, we have a cat, we have a dog, we have a human. And all of us have a level of organic consciousness, and maybe that's the point of it, is that it is in fact organic, but then that leads us to believe, or leads us to question whether or not metal is organic. I guess it's made of alkaloids. I don't know. I'm not a scientist in that matter. I really don't want to get on here and trying to differentiate the science, like the really hard science that is how something is organic or inorganic. I'm not really positive of all of that, but I do believe that that would make a lot of sense, is that we have these different levels of proto-consciousness. I love that. That, and then panpsychism, where consciousness is a non-reducible feature of every particle, each having its inherent proto-consciousness. I really appreciate that. So integrated information theory, I'm going to write that down so that we can talk about that in a future episode. All right. So number A is going to be non-physical local consciousness. The self, in part, is independent of the physical world, body, brain, and requires some kind of non-physical essence, perhaps a new non-physical feature of reality, and perhaps accessible via parapsychology or ESP. So maybe something's outside of us that we're tapping into. I would say that in terms of the idea of existence as a whole, that maybe consciousness, maybe ourself, and like maybe this determination of who we are as people, we're like tapping into it, like some sort of meta brain that we're able to access and download our consciousness from. That's crazy. But then there's also the idea that there's like this collective consciousness outside of all of us that we share, and that's how we're able to tune into what is defined as reality. Like, what is reality? It's a thing that we share, but everything's just made of these massive, massive complex levels of atoms and particles, and whatever waves that they work on, whatever speed they work on, whatever vibration they work on. And how is it that we determine that from one another, or that we have all decided that we are interacting with the same reality? I don't know. That's a trip. Anyway, number 9, non-physical God-created consciousness. The self is what the creator designed to be, the essence of human beings and perhaps of other beings as well. By using a kind of non-physical substance or a soul or spirit whose properties remain in interminable dispute, the soul spirit can be either a required component of consciousness that complements the brain, or an independent non-physical concrete existing thing that is inherently conscious and uses and manipulates the brain. Okay, so that's more so saying that we sort of download a consciousness through this thing called a soul. Number 10, so non-physical cosmic consciousness. The self as a whole is independent of the physical world, body, and brain, and derived from an all-pervading cosmic consciousness, which is ultimate reality, the fundamental progenitor of all physical existence. It says, well, number 8 and 9 both require non-physical components to generate a self, each could work in two distinct ways. In the more modest explanation, this non-physical component would combine with a brain so that the resulting entity actualizes a self. The second, more radical process would require that the non-physical component is itself a self. The brain being a mere mechanism or vehicle, the analogy being self and brain equals driver and car, or pejoratively, the ghost in the machine. In category 10, everything is derived from consciousness anyway, so it hardly matters. So some philosophers speak of the embodied mind, where a body is essential for the inner reflective dimensions of human experience, or the extended mind, where parts of the environment outside the body, such as your smartphone, become an integral part of your mind in an active externalism. But either concept, even if necessary for a robust sense of self, would not be sufficient for the self and would still require one of the categories to become a full theory of self. I don't know, man. So I found this really extremely interesting. Once again, I found this particular article on livescience.com, and it is written by Robert Lawrence Kuhn. And I'll go ahead and try and I'll make a post of this, and I'll make a relation to it in our show notes here. But I guess we've covered a lot of ground here today. I just really wanted to initially elaborate on the idea of Warwick Fox's theory of identity in terms of transpersonal ecology. So with deep ecology being that the world exists and the world has inherent inherent value regardless of however humanity interacts with it, or regardless of whether or not humanity is able to see the value of it as a whole. And so saying that everything has importance regardless of whether or not we see it as people. And then in what ways are we able to find our best place on the earth in order to allow the earth to work to its best ability, and to not necessarily put ourselves as this sort of stewardship, which is a lot of what they claim monotheistic religions tend to play a part in perpetuating, is that we as humans are above the earth, and we're different from the earth, and we're not a part of the earth. So we it's our obligation, our responsibility to take care of it. And while I do agree with that, it doesn't necessarily need to be in such an egotistical way and saying that, you know, we're better than it, so we need to make sure we take care of it. But in reality, we're just a part of it as well, and that humans play a role in the greater cohesiveness of what the earth is. And so for transpersonal ecology, we have the personal identity, the ontological identity, or what is the role of our species and what interactive role does our species play in terms of interacting with the rest of the species? And what benefit do we give? What detriment do we play? And then how can we best sort of kind of create a social enactment for us to be the better versions of ourselves individually as well as a species? And then cosmologically, what does it mean to be a human? What does it mean to be an earthling? And I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question, where we can continue to ask ourselves, like, what does it mean to be, you know, on this planet that scientifically is just almost maybe an accident. We have no idea why we're here. We have no idea how we got here. Or we can ask ourselves in a really spiritual, really metaphysical way or theoretical way of, you know, other civilizations existing outside of us and how we're able to interact with them and how can we be the best intergalactic entities that we can. And I believe in that as well. I'm not necessarily one of those psychics that is able to interact with any of these. I just interact with other people, and I interact with consciousness, and I interact with energy, and not necessarily all of these, like, Pleiadians and stuff like that. So if you guys are, please reach out to me. I would love to talk more about this idea of how we're, like, if you guys have interactions with these extra dimensionals, I would love to speak about it. Otherwise, I'm going to take this time to break up this episode into a secondary episode. Next week, I have an interview for you guys that I'm very much looking forward to. We have a really cool woman from the UK calling in who's going to be discussing relationships and relationship and attachment issues and benefits and all these different ways that we can really progress and be the best in our relationships as possible. And then after that, I will be retouching base on the idea of the archetypes. I wanted to do that today, but I spent 45 minutes kind of talking your ear off and working through my own personal shit. You guys, I really appreciate you listening to my show. If you would like to go ahead and reach out to me, my Instagram is sailor.allen. Or you can find us at Perceptionist Anonymous on Instagram or perceptionistanonymous@gmail.com. We have our little website up. I'm about to buy the domain name for Perceptionist Anonymous. If you guys have anything that you would like for me to talk about or anything you'd like for me to cover, or if you are a person that specializes in anything sort of involving identity or anything interesting social commentary, I am so into it, and I'm so excited to hear back from some of you. I know that I have a couple other episodes coming up from some requests that we've received from some listeners. So thank you very much, and I look forward to talking to you guys next week. Have a good day.